This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by ModCloth. Inner Ho
Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black polyamorous feminist ho living in New York City.
And me, Akua. I am one intersectional feminist who specializes in all things mental health and carefree. Black girl stuff, I guess.
And all things ho.
Oh, yes.
God damn it. Get off the show, Akua. Get off the show.
It's been a while.
As I mentioned earlier, my name is Sam. I am the principal host of this here show. That means that week in and week out, I am here with now one of two rotating co-hosts because our third has left the fucking state.
The country.
The country. The world. Okay. Goddamn air.
Not the world.
We miss you,
we
Rob.
We miss you, Rob.
Yes. If you've ever listened to the show before, you know that we have four co-hosts. One is Rob. Rob is going on a 11-month deployment to the army, which, we're not really
taking
big fans of the army here.
Taking mine, Rob.
Yeah. But yes. So for season four of the Inner Ho Uprising, since Rob is gone, we're going to have a different structure for you all. That means that every week we are going to be mixing it up a little bit. So we're going to have two interview episodes, which is basically our fuck it segment. If you guys remember that, if you ever listened to the show before, if you haven't listened to the show before, go back and listen to the fucking show. So our fuck it segment is usually where we talk to cool and interesting people about cool and interesting shit. Mm-hmm. We're just going to make that its own episode now. And then for the other two episodes per month, we're going to come together and talk shit about current events. We're going to talk shit about our vaginas.
About each other.
Exactly. I hate
just
that bitch.
Shit.
And then we're going to finally read you guys' listener letters. Yes. For the first time in like a year.
Literally.
For like 2 months since 2018 started. So that's the new format of this show. And this episode is going to be an interview episode.
Yes, it is.
And we are speaking with an asexual kinky person.
Yes.
It's going to be very interesting. Shout out to Akua for booking the best guest. If you're a new listener to this show, we have some segments here for you. So this episode is going to go something like this.
We have Bay of the Week,
which is where we talk about people who we find attractive.
We have Ho of the Week,
where we shout you guys out, the homies, listeners, the fans.
We have Self-Care Tip of the Week,
where we give you guys some advice on how to take care of yourselves.
We have Pay a Ho,
which is where we beg for money.
And we have Fuck It,
which is where we talk to our special guests of the day. And today we're talking with Lily Zhang, who is an asexual kinky person. Normally we have other segments, and on those episodes you'll hear those other segments.
Mm-hmm. If you guys would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to pay us to speak about sex positivity or black feminism or any of the other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show at your school or conference? Guess what? We'd love to do that. To book us, please send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com, and we'll come and we'll talk and we'll come in that order. We're going to fly out, we're going to talk, and then we're going to have orgasms on the stage.
On the stage after the talk.
Very interesting talks that we offer. Let's do a quick sponsor break.
Yes.
Cool. This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by ModCloth. ModCloth is the fun and friendly spot for style that's as expressive and unique as you are. Inspired daily by their amazing customers, it's their mission to serve and celebrate the community, inspire individual style, and empower femmes to be the best versions of themselves. That's why their signature line of apparel is offered in a full range from extra, extra small to 4X. So, summer is on the horizon, so pack your bags and hit the road in ModCloth's newest collection. Get lost in the breezy silhouettes and desert prints, infused with a sense of adventure. I'm ready to go to Dubai wearing these clothes. Again.
Yes.
Where are we going this summer, Akua? New Orleans?
Yes.
We're ready to go to NOLA rocking ModCloth.
I have to pack ModCloth dresses.
Exactly.
Outfit itineraries, yeah, right there.
That's the Essence Fest look. That's the Essence Fest aesthetic. Mm-hmm. This summer, you can discover every dress under the sun, whether it's a chic shift, which I don't even know what that is, but I like the fact that ModCloth has it for us, mm-hmm, or a must-have maxi. And I love me some fucking maxi dresses.
You know.
The butt dresses, as they say. Get your booty dress from ModCloth. If you're looking for the perfect fit, their signature label comes in a full size range from double small. Why do I keep saying double small? Because I've never worn that. But if you do wear extra, extra small, then ModCloth is here for you. And also up to 4X. I like that. You can even get free sizing and styling help from their team of mod stylists. You can go on their site and schedule and make an appointment to contact mod stylists for a sizing and fitting for free.
Oh,
which is cool. Yeah. Last but not least, all you niggas is getting married. Wedding season is fucking here. It sucks because you're a single ass bitch. But if you want to find your nigga or woman nigga, I don't know, or gender non-conforming nigga at the next wedding that you go to, you can go to ModCloth Bridals Boutique and you can be outfitted if you're a bride, bridesmaid, or on the very best dressed guest list, which is me because I'm always trying to show out on other people's
weddings.
You know,
that's always me. It's like, what should I wear? Oh, come casual. And then I'm just slaying exactly. To the nines, furs.
Because you have to go to the wedding to find your own fucking partner.
Yes.
Like, you're not going there to celebrate somebody else's love. You're trying to find your own love. How can people... Oh, you've shopped at ModCloth before.
Yes. So I got a couple cute dresses, which is why I'm so happy to do this.
Yeah.
Because the aesthetic of it is so vintage and so... It's like a chic vintage baby, like collaboration.
And vintage had sex. Also, I think it's very like crisp looking. Like it's very classic looking dresses, which I like.
And they fit amazing. They did have my size.
Nice.
On the first try, ordered it, came. I still have it in my closet.
Nice.
Like I should wear it again.
Yes.
Now it was for a more formal affair. I think I wore it to like a baptism or something, but they do have some stuff.
Well, that's good. So they have it from the full range of hoe to baptism.
Yes, so great. When I awesome. Have to step out of my hoedom, I knew
for those few seconds that
I had to go
do.
To church, I was like, oh, I am stuck.
That's what ModCloth is for.
Yeah.
That's good. If you guys would like to purchase from ModCloth, we have a very cool discount for you. So for 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, you can go to modcloth.com and enter code HOE at checkout. And you would have to hurry because this offer expires April 21st, 2018. So once again, for 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com and enter code HO at checkout. This expires April 21st, 2018. Go right now. Type. Let's get back to the show.
Yes.
All right. What's our first segment?
Bay of the week.
Yes. And today we have two very special bays. So there's this thing called South by Southwest coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the fuck that is, but apparently it's a very important event where people go and sing and talk and do conferences and things like that. And two of our podcasting homie groups are going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very proud of the fact that they're going to be there. So special Bay of the Week shout out to Money and Nikita over at Queer Walk and Janicia and Queen over at Tea with Queen and Jay. Very proud of what they've been doing all along, honestly.
Dope ass shit. And
it's always been very good shit.
The
exactly.
Platform.
Yes, this is dope as fuck. I really enjoyed the last episode of Queer Walk or two episodes ago when Money was just like talking about what schizophrenia is and how schizophrenia diagnoses are anti-black, and it fit very well into our COINTELPRO episode.
Mm-hmm. It did. I think that was two episodes ago.
Oh, that was two episodes ago. This episode, Money was talking about self-harm, which was also a very good episode.
When I say I've got in my life for the past two episodes of Queer Walk.
I would start
like a Twitter thread and I'm not listening to it full, so then I can't post it.
Yeah.
And then by the time I've listened to the whole episode, it's just like, well,
yeah,
it is what it is. But both episodes, I'm hollering, I'm crying, like it just I'm going through the emotions.
It's
it is
so
lit.
Good.
Like,
it's so good. Yeah.
It's been really good.
And then Tea with Queen and Jay is just consistently doing good review work. Like the
just
whole
snatching.
The whole She's Gotta Have It series was on point because I hated that series. Mm-hmm. I hated the show. But then hearing them talk about the show was just like, oh, yes. You get it. You get it. And then also their Black Panther review was also on PZ. So shout out to the folks. Shout out to the homies.
Mm-hmm.
Now for the other homies, the hoes of the week.
Yes.
Who are our hoes of the week?
Oh, we have a lot of hoes of the week. So those, we'll start with those that paid us.
Yes. First and foremost.
We have
the funders.
Yes, that keep us
exactly.
going.
Exactly.
We have Marcus O, Monique
yes.
M, Kristen W, Imari W, Olivia N, Teo, Terrietta M, Ophelia, Angharad E, and Aria M.
Really enjoyed everyone's name this week.
Just
some
so
very nice names.
Not your typical Samantha.
Not, but wait a minute. Fuck you.
Some people's parents.
Fuck you, Akua. No, why did I keep spelling it? Araku. I kept spelling it wrong, but that was by accident.
Yeah, right. Hating asshole.
Oh, man.
But thank you guys for paying us
yes.
and subscribing to our Patreon.
Yes.
Those that did it. Other hoes of the week are those who...
So we went viral this week.
Mm. Yes, let's start there.
We went viral. An image I made for International Women's Day a full year ago went viral because I was on the train. And I was like, let me post this shit again. Let everybody know the women who we need to be celebrating on International Women's Day. So as opposed to just talking about the people who are at the intersections of oppression, who are often ignored by mainstream white feminism. And yeah, and there were like cool people on it, like Winona LaDuke and Audre Lorde and stuff like that. So posted that again, and then Queer Walk reposted it. Yes. And then I was at work and we had 400 notifications and I was like, wait, what? And then Akua hit us up on Slack and Zendaya liked the post.
Yeah.
But not our post. Somebody from what?
Rowan.
Girl Meets World.
Yeah.
Yes, the actress from Girl Meets World reposted it and credited us. And then Zendaya liked the post and I was like, that's it. And then I walked to everyone in the office and I was like, I quit. I don't need to work anymore because Zendaya liked my post. No, that didn't happen. That didn't happen at all.
But yes, but a special thank you to all those people who reposted it and credited us, who went out of their way to make sure other people credited us. Everyone who reposted it, mentioned it on their Insta stories.
Yeah, thank you to people who credit black women for their work and labor, because niggas was stealing that shit. Okay, so last year, that shit only got 86 likes, and a nigga stole it, put it on Facebook, and his got 3,000 likes, and he never fucking, like, where did he get that from? Mm-hmm. You know he got it from the page.
Okay, exactly.
He just reposted the thing. But yeah, so thank you for the people who do credit black women for what they do. What's our next segment?
Self-care tip of the week.
You had a self-care tip this week.
Yes. My self-care tip this week is to get into your smartphone. Get into that reminders app or whatever it is and type in positive affirmations. So whatever you need, whatever positivity you need in your life, type them out, set them as reminders, and they will and set them for a certain time every day
that you have that lull, like 3 p.m. when I want to just take a siesta, and I wish siestas existed
in the U.S.
Yeah, in the U.S. in general.
Whatever time works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, not for, well, if even if it's before you go to bed, whatever time works for you, whatever time you know you have slow traffic on your phone, is like, it will surprise you.
When your phone is dry.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to yourself.
So that every day at 2:55 p.m.,
yes.
Boom. Positivity slaps right in the face.
It's a very good idea. Because reminders are always just like, go get milk, bitch. Like, can I have some positivity in my life and remind me to go get milk?
At 2:55, it's, you are beautiful. You are worthy.
Exactly.
That's what you need. Self-care.
Go pick up your cucumbers.
That too.
Our next segment. Thank you. That was very good. Our next segment is Pay a Ho. So if you guys would like to help sustain the Inner Ho Uprising podcast monetarily, you can do so by going to innerhouprising.com and clicking the tab Pay a Ho. You can also do the exact same thing by going to paypal.me/innerho. Both ways take you to our PayPal. You can also buy merchandise on innerhouprising.com by clicking the merchandise tab. You can also use the sponsor codes used in this previous and future episodes, because when you support our sponsors, you do support us. You can also now support a hoe on a monthly basis by subscribing to us on Patreon and receive perks while you're doing it. This is an easy way to throw some dollars monthly towards the show, because studios, transportation, and events ain't cheap. If you're able and you'd be so kind, please visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouprising, and donate $2. That will give you access to private IHU gatherings, like Rob's going away party, for example, which you fucking missed because you weren't on Patreon because you wanted to act silly. But don't act silly anymore. Get the fuck on Patreon. And if you do get the fuck on Patreon, you can also have our undying love and affection. And for the price of $5 a month, you can get all that, as well as access to some exclusive behind the scenes video content. Perfect for people who want to see, like, Zayn, for example. Everybody likes Zayn. Everybody thinks Zayn is sexy as fuck. We had a whole hour-long video of us talking to Zayn. And you get to see the parts that were cut out from the show. Mm-hmm. Like, we had an orgy with Zayn. I didn't tell you that part of Google, but we all fucked that evening, okay? Right here in Cast Sound Lab. No, that didn't happen, but you can see the things that you didn't see on Patreon. You can also donate less or more. Anything from $1 a month to $1 zillion a month. Anything is appreciated. This is just a more consistent way to pay a hoe. Pretty much spending what you would for four tiny cans of thought juice at your local deli, but to pay a hoe. I don't know where I was going with that anymore. I didn't have an analogy. This is spending $5 a month to help us. That's all it is. Please help. If you can't, thank you anyway. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Let's get into the actual show now. That's a party.
that's a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend.
We're gonna go to our first and only segment, which is Fuck It, our topic of the day. And today we're speaking with Lily Zhang. Lily Zhang is a trans activist, diversity consultant, and alumna of Stanford University, where she served as a columnist of the Stanford Daily, writing on topics such as mental health, sex and consent, activism, and everyday advocacy. She also served as co-president of the student group Cardinal Kink, which created a space and community for university students interested in kink, which is very fucking cool, and I didn't even know that existed in universities. She describes herself as a no-nonsense trans femme with a splash of cyberpunk badassery. Welcome, Lily, to the show!
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Let's jump right into it. So what is your definition or understanding of asexuality?
I feel like most identities, when you talk about ace, it's a spectrum more than a stable kind of definition. For me, the way that I understand it is I think it's about a different relationship to sexuality than prescribed by kind of normative Western US culture. And so that's necessarily very broad. And I think that's the point. But the idea is that your relationship to sexuality is different. So whether that's you experience no kind of sexual attraction or sexual desire, or whether that's you experience sexual desire under certain circumstances, or, I don't know, only on Fridays, or if there's an emotional connection, it's really about having that different relationship to sexuality than would be prescribed by dominant culture.
That makes sense. So in that case, and this might just be me being weird and getting in the weeds, but is, in your opinion, is sexuality in general just a spectrum?
Yeah, I would totally say that. I'd say it's a spectrum, and I'd also say it's really kind of self-defined, right? Like, all identities are kind of created in negotiation between yourself and your internal, you know, ideas of what they mean, and society and what society tells you certain things mean. And all identities are kind of in this tension, necessarily between these two ideas, but there's a lot of wiggle room between these two endpoints.
So when did you first discover the fact that you were asexual or kind
on
of started?
The spectrum.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's a fun story. I told the story during an event at Stanford a few years back. It was the sexuality event. And the way it goes is pretty much the first time I had sex with my now girlfriend. I think I remember kind of zoning out a bit and then thinking that I wanted to like repaint my nails for a good like 15 minutes, like in the middle of sex. I was just like, man, this is whatever. I really need to paint my nails. And then I just really wasn't into it. And I had a big crisis because I told myself that, well, I really love this girl. I really like this relationship. And I had kind of built up what sex would have been in my head for months. And eventually, when I had sex, it was all right, I guess. It was
a little
okay.
Lackluster.
It wasn't great. Like, it wasn't terrible. It just was, like, all right, I guess this is happening. And then it finished. And I felt like an imposter because she clearly had a good time. And I still cared about her a lot. And all I felt was just like, well, it was kind of like we just kind of folded laundry together, right? Like, or it was like, I don't know, I just kind of gave you a massage or something. Like, not a bad thing, just not magical. And around that time, I was wondering if I was broken or if I just had a different, or if I could potentially be ace. And after thinking about it for a while and after having sex with her a few more times, I really started to gravitate towards the ace identity. One, because it made me feel less bad about myself. And two, because it seemed to better describe my relationship to her. And also, like, well, yeah. So that was the best thing to describe the situation at the time.
How did you come about the terminology of ace, because that's not something you know, we all know.
Right. Well, that's just the question. I would say the internet is a really good source of information for millennials, given that we grow up with it.
Yeah.
Or I grew up with it. Are y'all millennials?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we all grew up with it. I think I found it on this, it was a page of like queer and trans terminology. And so like I read it as part of this laundry list. And at the time I actually didn't vibe with it because I read a very simplistic definition that just said ace people hate sex. They're sex repulsed. Nothing about sex is enjoyable. Like you mention sex and they throw up and I'm like, okay, like that's not,
not me.
Right. And it was a very kind of black and white kind of definition that I thought didn't fit. And it took a few years later, around the time that I was actually figuring this stuff out, that I found definitions that were more, that allowed for more interpretation, that allowed for people to say, oh, you know, like ace is about something landing in this ballpark. And I'm like, oh, I'm in that ballpark. So I guess I could be ace. And I think this entire time, what was important to me was not that I found the identity label that exactly fit my experiences, but that I found the identity label that made me feel the best about who I was. And there were plenty that I could have picked, right? Like, to be fair, now I use ace a little less and I use demi a little more, but I would say demisexual is part of the ace spectrum as well. So it's just a matter of what words do you know? And how comfortable do you feel with the terminology you're using?
And can you quickly describe demi for people who...
My understanding of it is sexual attraction when there's a strong emotional connection. And so that kind of has to be the prerequisite. Or, you know what? That's actually technically not right. That's how I define it. I think demisexual is... closer to gray ace, which I have to define.
Yeah, is, now you're getting into territory that is, we don't actually know what you're talking about.
Which is basically some sexuality, but not always. And so it's kind of midway between like sex repulsed and kind of, I don't know, very sexual. It's basically, well, sometimes I want to have sex and there are certain conditions. And for me, the conditions are, well, I need to have a strong emotional connection with the person that I'm having sex with. I can't have sex with strangers. That's just not something that I do.
This is so interesting because it seems like it can apply to many, many people. Like this doesn't seem like it actually needs to be like a small minority of people who identify with these terms. But I think probably people don't know that they can even identify with these terms or that these terms even exist. Or they just exist in a country that... wants them to be one way or another.
Yeah. Right. I agree wholeheartedly. I feel like some of the downsides of adopting labels like this is that we kind of lose the ability to critique the dominant culture. And I would say that this actually describes more people than we think it does in like dominant culture.
Yeah.
Right. Like maybe normative quote unquote sexuality is pretty fucked, for lack of a better word, and that a lot of people are actually running around like, I don't actually want to do what I'm doing right now. This is just what people say that I have to do, and I have to hook up with like random people who I don't want to, but we don't really know.
You're defining a phase in my life right now.
Literally.
It's like, wait, did I enjoy that? No.
Why was I having those one night stands? Was it really for me?
I feel it. I feel it hard.
Yeah. So... there's kind of like these different breakdowns within asexuality. Do you want to ask that question?
So from my understanding of asexuality, which differs from the wonderful definition that you just gave us,
yes.
It's kind of those who are just not sexually attracted. Well, may not. How can I put this? So it's people who... don't have a sexual attraction to any specific gender. And attraction has three parts. Aesthetic or physical attraction, where you're physically attracted to someone without automatically wanting to jump their bones. Or
romantic.
Or romantic attraction, where you are romantically attracted to someone, be your girlfriend, partner, and you bond that way. And then sexual attraction, where you do want to see someone and jump their bones without any of the other two combined.
What is your experience with attraction? Like, do you only not experience sexual attraction or aesthetic attraction or romantic attraction?
That's a great question. So I experience aesthetic attraction to, like, everything that moves, pretty much. Like, I just love people. Like, to be fair, I think lately I've been more aesthetically attracted to femmes than anything else. Just something about women. I love women. So
pretty great.
I will just tell you within, like, 2 seconds if I think, you know, someone or you is attractive. I'm like, holy crap, this person is super cute. I want to, like, hold their hand and give them a hug. So I experience that towards, like, every femme I see, pretty much, and some guys, if they're special, I guess. And romantic attraction, that takes, well, so I would say historically I've been romantically attracted more to femmes than masks, but I have three partners right now, and two of them are women, one of them is a man. So I would say that my romantic attraction is not exclusive to gender. Very much like I fall in love with people's personalities, and gender is kind of like a side little bonus thing. With regards to sexual attraction, I think I don't really experience much of that, and people get confused because my aesthetic attraction is usually connected to, like, I don't know what the word is, like a physical attraction. Like, I really want to hold people's hands and I really want to cuddle with people.
So it manifests in physical way.
Yeah. Like, it's like a, like, well, whatever. Let's just call it, like, physical. I mean, it's not physical attraction. Terminology is weird. So I just want to cuddle with most of the people that I see. But that doesn't mean I want to date them. And that definitely doesn't mean that I want to fuck them. And that's hard because not too many people kind of have in their head, like, oh, I'm going to go over to your place and cuddle. They're just like, oh, that means you want to fuck. And I'm like, like, keep that far away from me. I just want to hold your hand.
So how is navigating that, like navigating your boundaries and your wants and your needs, maybe particularly with the current partners that you have now, like, how did you break all of that down to them in a way that makes sense?
This is really where, like, this is really where kink comes in, because I feel like to navigate these boundaries, I've had to really learn how to negotiate and communicate them. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something that I learned. Like, it's not just something that you pick up. So being really blunt with, like, hey, I really want to sleep in your bed tonight and not do anything besides, like, cuddle with you and spoon. Are you up for that? Mm-hmm. And that's it. Or, hey, I think I want to get intimate with you, but what that means is I just want to kiss you and, like, I don't know, just be really physical, but I don't want to do any genitalia stuff. And people are like, that's oddly specific. And I'm like, no, that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So learning how to communicate that has been an ongoing thing for me, but I feel like I've gotten good at it. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why I've been able to keep these three relationships for more than 3 years now, I think, is because we've all gotten really good at communicating our boundaries. And that's not just me, but my partners as well.
That's a lesson for everyone. Are you all in, if you don't mind my asking, are you all in one relationship together, or are these your partners separately?
No, these are all separate.
Cool.
So one of my partners is another one of my partner's spouse's best friend. So
we're drawing diagrams now.
Just a fun little poly network.
Cool.
Well, yeah, since kink has helped you negotiate these terms, how did you get into kink?
Yeah, so I would say the internet again.
Nice.
yes, Google for the
win. What's the story here? Well, so it was less Google. I found, like, this role-playing site, this kind of, like, a text-based role-playing site where you would kind of make a profile and then chat with other people's profiles. But it was like a fantasy thing. So you picked like a fantasy race and you like got to create like character personality stuff. It was super fun.
Cool.
And as part of the character creation thing, they had, oh my God, they had like thousands of like kinks that you could assign to your character. And I didn't realize that that was out of the norm because this was the first site that I found. And I was like, oh, this is super fun. And with every single kink, if you moused on top of it, it would give you a little drop-down thing with its description.
Cool.
So it was like this amazing 101 crash course in way too many things that I had no interest in learning. But I got my like kink education in like a day, which was a lot.
That's awesome.
And so by making that character profile, I was just like, okay, well, what's this? And I would show me the definition. I'm like, oh, that's weird. I'm not into that. And then I'd be like, what's this? And I'd be like, oh, that's also weird, but I think I'm into that.
Hmm.
And so do that with a couple hundred. And I was just like, I think I know what my kinks are. But I didn't realize that they were kinks. Mm-hmm. I was just like, that's just what I'm into. And then I think, because this was in high school, of course, I think that the topic came up in some conversation, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm into that. And like people looked at me like I had murdered somebody. And they were like, what the fuck? And I was like, oh no, wasn't supposed to say that. Oh shit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I learned that most of the shit that I was into was kinky, but mm-hmm. it didn't seem kinky before then because it was normal.
Yeah.
For me.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned, we read a Cosmo article that you were featured in, which is how the lovely Akua found you in the first place.
Yeah.
And in that article, I guess you had said to the reporter that you started using kink as a way to navigate sexuality, like to, I guess you thought that by going into BDSM, it would make you more receptive to sex. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So the thing is, the way that I've talked about this has changed across the years. And so this was before I had actually had sex. I actually started doing kink before I had sex. And so in my head, sex was kind of the golden goose. And kink was just like the escalator, right? Working up to it. Like I was like, well, I haven't had sex yet, but I've done bondage and like I've done all these things. And eventually when I have sex, it's going to be like the best, awesomest, kinky sex ever. And that kind of culminated in the story that I started off this this interview with. That was just kind of mediocre, and that kind of shook everything, right? Because like it was as if you climbed to the top of the escalator and found nothing, right? It was just like there's nothing for me here. And so that really made me reconsider my relationship to kink, because before I saw kink as kind of the appetizers to sex as the main course. And I had to kind of reshape the way that I thought about kink to make kink the main course itself, right? Like maybe I could be into this just because I'm into this. And that's really kind of where this kind of kinky but ace state happened. Because I began to see kink as potentially separate from sex. And that was really liberating for me.
I guess most people, when they talk about kink, they are speaking from a place of arousal.
Mm-hmm.
And when you engage in BDSM or kink, what is the fulfilling aspect of it to you?
Yeah, is what there, is your motivation?
Is there arousal there? And it's like different from sexual arousal, kind of like when you want good food, or is it?
Yeah,
sure.
So this is my favorite question because everyone asks it. And the response that I usually give is it feels like skydiving or snowboarding,
mm-hmm.
right? So like somebody can really, really enjoy skydiving, but you won't say that that person is sexually aroused by skydiving,
yeah.
right? Like it's different. Even though skydiving is a deeply intense physical experience, right? There's tons of adrenaline. There's mm-hmm. tons of, it's just intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the same way, I'm into kink. And so it's not necessarily from a sexual, stance. It's, mm-hmm. it's more, this is just an intense physical activity that gets me going. It's entertaining. It's intense. We do crazy shit. And it's really fun.
That was a great way to describe it.
Do you mind going to in detail about the crazy shit that you do? Because I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I don't do as much of it now, but God, what was it? You can find this online, but we were publishing an article in Salon Magazine about my club, Cardinal Kink's, recent rejection from becoming a student group at Stanford. And we wanted a cool photo to go with it. And so rather than find the stock photo, we asked a really prominent rope top in the Bay Area to come to Stanford. And it was at night and it was raining. We set up a bunch of lamps on Stanford's campus, and we did an upside down rope suspension. So I was hanging from the structure in the middle of the night while it was raining, and we did this upside down rope photo shoot for like 3 hours. That was really, really fun. And should I say this? No, I'm gonna say this. We bought like $100 worth of Stanford branded apparel from the bookstore to wear during the photo shoot. And then the day after, we returned them saying that they did.
Yes.
That's perfect. That's
That was a fun story. What are some other things that I do? I've also taught like hypnosis classes at conferences, and erotic hypnosis is really fun, and that's another thing that I do more recently.
How does that play out?
Oh God, we could have an entire interview about that. So I'll just let y'all Google it, and you okay. can come back to me with other questions okay. if you want to ask more, because that's a complicated kink, but it's a great one.
Cool. Do you disclose that you're asexual to your partners?
Oh yeah, all of them know. It hasn't really meant anything, given that all the terms that I use are just kind of like, okay, that's great. What does it mean to you? And so them knowing that I'm ace is much less important than them knowing what the exact arrangement that I want in our relationship is. And so, for example, with one partner, let's call her Kay. She and I talked a lot about what we wanted from each other. And from the beginning, I was like, I don't really want a sexual relationship. I have that fulfilled by my other partners. I just want to go on 2 dates with you and like hang out and like sleep over. And she was like, that actually works really well, because I also have my sexual needs met by my other partners. And so let's do it.
Did you specifically ask for 2 dates? Is that what you said?
Oh, no. That's okay. Too specific.
Okay. Yeah,
why would I ask for that? I'm not going to end the relationship yeah. after 2 dates. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
But I could see someone doing that. So that's fair, I guess.
That's me.
No, I just said, like, we have cute dates.
Oh,
cute,
cool.
I think
cool.
was the word.
Thanks.
But then about 2 years into our relationship, I think we were, like, sitting on my couch. And I was just like, this is really weird. I kind of want to have sex with you. And she was like, that is pretty weird. Let's not do it this time and talk about it for next time. And I'm like, that's a good idea. And so we renegotiated our relationship. And so now we're kind of both exploring the possibility of sex, and she's going to buy like a harness, and it's going to be really fun. And we got her a strap on, and I'm really stoked, because this is kind of like a new chapter. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what's going to happen, but we renegotiated our relationship. So it seems like we're both on board with it, and who knows, right? Maybe it'll be super fun and we'll like it, or maybe it won't, and we'll renegotiate again.
Great. Can you explain the importance of the fact that you guys decided to hold off on doing that? When you felt the urge and kind of talked about it beforehand?
Well, I think she was being responsible, and I was also being sort of responsible, because in our previous relationship dynamic, we had just said that we wouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. And so it was just coming straight out of the blue for me, going like, hey, I want to have sex, right? And she was honoring our previous arrangement and saying, well, that's not what we agreed on. We can totally have sex, but we need to agree on something else first. And I'd rather not do that now, because as it is now, I just want to have sex with you. which is very fair, right? Like it's kind of, I would say a softer version of like, you're drunk, you can't negotiate,
yeah.
right? And I really respect that. And so I said, you're right. That makes a lot of sense. Let's just keep on doing this date and we can talk about it next time. And we did.
That's great. And are all of your partners into kink?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's a big prerequisite. I don't date vanilla folks. Can't do that.
Do any of your partners identify as ace, or are they all sexual, quote unquote, sexual people?
Oh, they're very sexual. This has been a problem for all of my relationships, but we kind of negotiated our way around them. Being poly really, really helps. I think if I was monogamous with any one of these partners, the relationship wouldn't have lasted because I can't meet all of my partner's sexual needs given that I'm not a very sexual person.
Are there any behaviors that, because you talked about cuddling before and some people thinking that's like initiative to wanting sex or having a sexual desire, are there any other behaviors that have been misinterpreted as, you know, that you want to have sex and you're really like, no, I just want to be the little spoon?
French kissing, I guess, because I think people have this same sort of escalator model where they're like, okay, well, you held my hand and then we cuddled and then you kissed me and then you used tongue. So now you're going to give me a blowjob. And I'm like, whoa. Where'd you assume that? And I'm just like, that's not on the table. We said we would kiss. And they're just like, well, yeah. But usually when people say they want to kiss, like, what that means is they want to fuck. And I'm like, who are you fucking? Right? Like, is this how, like, vanilla heteros do it?
Yes, it is. It definitely is.
And I'm really not about it.
That's a very, like, rape culture-y kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that certain things mean certain things, mm-hmm. as opposed to outright, this is what I said and this is what I want. Mm-hmm. And also that kind of like, oh, well, I'm just going to change her. Like, Lily French kissed me. That must mean that Lily's now into sex because I'm French kissing Lily. So, yeah.
See, the only way that I would consent to that is if we had consented beforehand that I was into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely something that I've done with my partners, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've been dating for 3 years. Like, I'm just going to give you blanket consent to, like, pretty much fuck me whenever you want, unless I say word, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Go for it. Mm-hmm. But that's not something that I do on, like, a first date.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think something that I used to teach, well, I guess I still teach it. I haven't taught a consent class in a while, but the way that I teach it is communication is inversely proportional to trust. And so the more you trust someone, the less you have to communicate. The less you trust someone, the more you have to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't feel comfortable going into a sexual situation and having the other person assume that I trust them like a really close partner to do things without telling me.
Yeah.
And the flip side is if I've been dating you for 3 years, like, yeah, we both know each other really well. You can generally do pretty much whatever we said that you could do mm-hmm. without asking me. And that makes it really fun.
This is a off tangent question, but Akua, you had said spoon. So Lily, are you a big spoon or a little spoon? Or are you a switch spoon?
It depends what partner. I have mm-hmm. lots of partners.
Mm-hmm.
With the guy I'm dating, he's physically bigger than me. Mm-hmm. And so I love being little spoon. I have a thing for size differences and mm-hmm. I don't really get it very often. So mm-hmm. that's really nice. Yeah. With the two women I'm dating, it's pretty 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I dig it. How about you, Akua?
I am a little spoon all the way. I don't want to be a big spoon.
I'm so about it.
I used to think that I was a little spoon, but then sometimes I big spoon big boys. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, this is interesting.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Witchy spoon. You don't like dominant. Big spooning big boys?
No, I don't like big spooning anyone. I am the little spoon.
No matter what.
No matter
when the big spoon is smaller, I call it jetpacking. And that makes it more entertaining.
I have that's to my act new that. Yes.
Can I jetpack you?
It's great. I love it.
In this conversation about trust and consent and, you know, kind of blanket consent, are there anything that's like a hard limit for you that is just a no, do not pass, go, I don't ever want this?
It really depends who. Mm-hmm. I think with people that I've been dating for a really long time, a lot of my hard limits become soft limits.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there's something that someone wants to do, like, and they want to do it enough to have a long conversation with me, like, yeah, I'll consider it.
Mm-hmm.
With strangers, I have a ton of hard limits. If it's like at a play party, like no blood, no fluids, it's pretty classic.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to, like, we need to, if for some reason I want to have sex with you, it needs to be with barriers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Bring your own tarp if you're going to do something messy.
It's very hygienic.
Yeah. Oh, it's just general like play party etiquette. Yeah. You don't want to get shit on the floor. Then you have to clean it up. Yeah. Like metaphorical and literal. let's see. One of my biggest hard limits is no oppression play. Mm. That's something that I open up my relationship to because I think it can be really hot when it's done the right way. Mm-hmm. And I teach a class on how to do it the right way, but I'm really not into people being misogynistic or transphobic or racist or classist.
Yeah.
Like, whether on purpose or not on purpose during a scene, mm-hmm. or during sex, mm-hmm. or during anything intimate, mm-hmm. at all. It's just a total turn off, especially if it's not intentional. If it's just like we spent a few hours talking about it and like you're gonna call me a slut all scene because it's hot, like, very different.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're trying to pick me up and you call me a slut, I'm just gonna dump you on the spot.
See, mm-hmm. gotcha.
What are some stereotypes or misconceptions you've encountered as an asexual trans woman of color who's into kink?
Well, that's a lot of identities you put there. There's like 15 misconceptions that come with every single identity you listed there. Mm-hmm. I don't think there are any specifically that happen because I'm an asexual queer trans woman that's into kink. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. those would be very specific.
Okay.
Let's see. So I guess like I can go identities at a time.
We can dumb it down to just stereotypes you have of identifying as ace and being in kink. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not even stereotypes, but just like,
or misconceptions. Like, has there been pushback from either groups or identities that, oh, you're asexual, so you can't be into kink, or vice versa?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's of course. Like, some ace people that I've met, right, like really identify on like the binary end of the ace spectrum. Mm. As in, like, I hate sex. I never want to think about sex. Sex is disgusting, which I think is fine. But they get very prescriptive about it, which I don't like. And mm-hmm. so they're just like, you can't be ace because you enjoy sex sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, that's literally, like, I think we both agree on the same definition of ace. I'm just on the other end of the spectrum from you. So, yeah. like, mm-hmm. chill. So that's frustrating. Mm-hmm. Then there's some people that think that kink is inherently sexual, mm-hmm. Which I completely disagree with. But I can see that if you held that point of view, you could see that being ace and kinky is kind of like a ontological impossibility, mm-hmm. right? Is that the word? I don't know, right? Like,
we're not sure. We were just uh-huh. like, you're a Stanford grad.
You have words. Yeah,
you have words that we don't.
I'm a psych major. I'm not a talk fancy words philosophy major. Yeah, so I think just a lot of people don't really think past their stereotypes mm-hmm. of what, you know, one of what kinky people look like or what ace people look like. So when you think of ace, right, in your head, you're just like, I'm going to imagine a nun. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, yeah, sure, I guess for some people. But again, it's a spectrum, right? And then when you imagine kinky, you're just like, I'm gonna imagine like deviant sex pervert. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess like some people.
Yeah.
But again, it's a big spectrum and there's lots of overlap. Mm-hmm.
That is kind of interesting that both the kink community and the ace community exist at the margins, but have pushback when there's someone within the margins.
Like, who intersects. It's like, yeah, oh, no.
Exactly. So that kind of sucks, but it's really cool.
I mean, are you surprised?
No.
It's like the definition of intersectionality, right? That no one likes you. That's why you're special.
No surprise here, just sadness.
With all those identities we've listed, how have you navigated or reconciled, in quotes, all those identities and that unique intersection that you're at?
Yeah, well, it's a lot. I think it's really being mindful of the space that I take up, the space that I'm entitled to, and really trying to figure out why people are treating me the way they're treating me, mm-hmm. which is pretty much impossible, right? Because there's so many marginalized like identities in that mix. And at the same time, there's so many privileged identities in that mix as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a Stanford grad. My family is middle class. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I'm conventionally attractive, sort of. I'm not sure if I think
I think you're
hot. Yeah, we've seen you. Yeah, I agree.
I have, like, hella skinny privilege. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I'm East Asian, which in the Bay Area is I think, a privilege in certain spaces. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's complicated, right? Like, it's just, like, all people with a mix of privileged and marginalized identities. It's just, like, figuring out, well, are you treating me like shit because I'm trans? Are you treating me like shit because I'm kinky? Are you treating me like shit because, I don't know, I'm a Stanford student and you expected me to be less kinky? I don't know, right? And so it's just a juggling act between identities. And given that I live a very public life and most of my identities are just kind of out, mm-hmm. It makes it really hard. I think when I was younger and I used to just have, like, I don't know, the only identity that I'd be out as is, like, trans, right? Mm-hmm. And then I could be like, everything's happening because I'm trans. Mm-hmm. And, like, now I can't say that, right? Like, there's too many things going on. And so I just kind of roll with it and make the best of what I'm going through and tell myself that it doesn't really matter why I'm getting treated the way I'm getting treated. It just matters that I'm getting treated that way. Mm-hmm. And should I do something about it?
It's a good way to look at things.
Yeah.
It's also often very hard. I'm just going to go on a quick personal tangent, but like sometimes I'm like, or do people just not like me because I'm an asshole? Like,
it's
I just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. Wait. I totally have a story.
Go for it. Yeah.
I was like walking down the street in like San Francisco and what was it? Somebody across the street like catcalled at mm-hmm. me because he was looking straight at me.
Yeah.
And so I got really, really mad, because I hate it when people catcall. Mm-hmm, and I started like walking like literally across the street to like confront this dude. And then he looks at me with this like super weirded out expression, like, what's your deal? And I turn around and like behind me is this like auto mechanic store and his friend was like under a car and he was trying to get the other person's attention.
Yeah.
He was literally trying to get the other person's attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other person was just like, hey, what's up? And then I was just like, I look really dumb. I'm going to pretend like I haven't seen anything and just walk away and try not to think of how dumb I look right now. And like, it was really humbling for me because I'm just like, holy shit, not everything is about me being super fucking oppressed all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Right? And like, I feel like we have this kind of hair trigger oppression PTSD stuff. And
exactly.
We're just like, every time someone looks at me wrong, it's because they hate one of my 20 marginalized identities.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just such an exhausting way to live.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is the oppression on top of all the oppression. Even when you're not being oppressed,
right.
The fact that you have to think about
you're
it is oppressing.
Yourself at that
exactly.
point. It's like, oh my God, I need to give myself a break.
Right. I need a vacation.
yeah, I know.
We're going to wrap this up pretty shortly, but we did want to touch on the Cardinal Kink Club at Stanford.
Tell us
what about it?
What prompted you to be engaged in it, the journey it went through?
Oh, man, that's a story. Mm-hmm. So I've documented it pretty well in the Stanford Daily. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote a column called Cardinal Kink Reprise, which I recommend you look up. But basically, when I was a frosh, I came into Stanford and there was like a meme page or some shit. Mm. And I was making jokes about kink and someone private messaged me and was like, oh, you know, Stanford actually has this informal group of like 5 people that are into kink. And I'm just like, oh, that's funny. And so I showed up and I kind of expected it to be a joke, but it was like 5 students that were just really into kink. And I was just like, holy shit, this is my crew. And so I organized with them. And it took us about 2 years, but we ended up founding Cardinal Kink. I'm actually not the founder. I was the first president, but everyone thinks I'm the founder. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. What can I say? We just really tried hard, and we invited a bunch of speakers over. We really worked to kind of destigmatize kink on Stanford's campus. And we got, I don't know, like 150-plus members in a few years.
Cool. Wow.
It was a pretty good club. Yeah, it was great. And I think, you know, the club's a little smaller now, given that the founder and me both graduated. So mm-hmm. it's a bit hard to maintain momentum after the people that start the club leave.
Yeah.
But I think the club's still doing well. And I think we achieved our initial goal, which was to destigmatize kink at Stanford. I tell the story a lot. But what I really, really, really liked seeing was in my senior year of my undergraduate, there was a video put out by the admissions team of like incoming students, right? Like new admits. Mm-hmm. And one of the trivia questions that the reporters asked them was just like, oh God, something, something sex education. And then one of the students was like, oh, is that Cardinal King? And then the reporters were like, no, no, that's not Cardinal King. And then one of the other students was just like, wait, what's Cardinal King? And then the other student was just like, oh, it's a student group that talks about kink. And like, that was it. And like, everyone else was like, oh, that's really chill. And like, kept on going and like, went about their day. And I'm just like, yes, right? like no kind of like shitty kink jokes, like no like side eye. Like it was just, yeah, like that's just Stanford's kink club. That's just how it works here, right? Like you just gotta get with the program. And that's just what we wanted the whole time. So I'm really glad that we succeeded in that respect.
Sweet. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Was the only requisite of joining the student group being into kink?
Ooh, we actually had a pretty big onboarding process. So you had to be into kink. You also had to meet with one of the existing leadership. And we gave all people like a consent 101 talk that went beyond yes, yes means yes, and kind of made sure that all people were on board with the negotiation structure of consent. And so the idea was that leadership could kind of take our eyes off the club and expect that everyone in our club would be playing with each other and having sex with each other, and that things would be relatively okay. And so that was a tall order, given that these were strangers, but we really tried our best to onboard people that were there genuinely because they cared about kink, and we tried to turn away people that used it as like a dating service. Because there were definitely people that are just like, I just want to hook up with people that like to be choked. And I'm like, that's what FetLife is for, not our club. So I think we did a good job. And I'm still really proud of the community that we created, even though most of the people that I know have graduated. And I do hope that current leadership is still doing that. But I, to my knowledge, I think they still are, which is great.
As we wrap up, are there any other projects or things you're working on, things that you do that you want to talk about? I know you
mentioned... I'm working on a million projects. the biggest one I would say is I'm publishing a book in 2 months in May. Yeah. It's called Gender Ambiguity in the Workplace, Transgender and Gender Diverse Discrimination. I'm really, really stoked about it. It's the result of like a 3-year-long writing project, and it just concluded. We signed the contract. We're getting the book launch set up. I'm really, really excited for it. So look it up. Check it out. It's about trans people in the workplace. It's about trans resilience, trans discrimination. And I just think it's super cool. So you should look it up.
That's totally awesome. Congratulations.
Yes.
You do such good things.
So it has nothing to do with Ace or kink.
That's fine.
That is fine. That is still something people need to find and read.
And it's also in our wheelhouse. So thank you for sharing that. Any other projects you'd like to share?
If you want to know more about it, you can ask me more about it another time.
Yeah.
I'll talk about it all
Lily on
day.
Various episodes. What was that? Was it erotic hypnosis?
Yes.
We got to have a whole episode dedicated to that.
Yes. We should just have a Lily podcast.
Well, there you go.
I could film so many episodes. Anyways, other projects. I'm going to be releasing a card game soon that I developed while working at Stanford. I was a design researcher for a few months, and I developed a card game called I Hear You, Courageous Card Cards for Courageous Conversations. Mm. And basically, it's a card game that allows people to talk about race, gender, class, sexuality, politics, and other tough and difficult topics with a structure and in a way that's fun. So that's going to be getting
that
really fun.
I need that.
That is dope.
Is that, I know. Everyone does.
Are you releasing that? Or is that
like...
Go ahead.
What's up?
Is that released already? I'm just pulling out my debit card.
So I'm getting it on Amazon very soon.
Cool.
But that was the result of a user research process that like involved probably 1,000 people. So yes, like I would hope that everyone needs it because that's what everyone who we interviewed told us.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited for that coming out soon. And we're hopefully going to have a big campaign to get it into classrooms and into higher ed and into nonprofits and educators and families. And I'm really excited for that game as well.
When that's available, please like send us a line. Let us know so we can let the people know.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, can do. That's of course, cool. I will.
Congratulations. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Like,
despite being sick, although we hope you feel better and you get some rest.
I'll feel better eventually. Usually my voice is a full octave higher. It's really cute. I'm just like, whoa.
That's fine. Are there any specific places on social media or a website that you would like to direct our listeners to find more out about you?
Yeah, the website is under development, but if you want to see shit posts and political commentary, go to my Twitter, LilyZhang308, LilyZhang308. And if you want to see too many selfies, you can go to my Insta, same handle.
Sweet. And that will be in the description for this episode. Thank you so much, Lily.
Thank you so much. Amazing.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Ooh, that was
she's some... smart as hell.
That was some amazing ass.
That's the now we're really into the territory of I don't know what we're talking about anymore, which kind of makes me feel scared because I'm like, damn, but like it's good because I'm like, oh wait, that makes me think about myself. Like, damn, am I demisexual sometimes? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like thinking about it as a spectrum, which is something I never thought about before. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty fucking cool. And let's end this show.
Cool.
Hope you guys enjoyed that super cool interview from Lily. What do we have going on next week? Oh, we have someone awesome for you next week, but you'll find out if you tune in. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you guys would like to follow us on social media, you can do so by following at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. Go to InahoUprising.com to pay a ho or check out merchandise. Mm-hmm. You guys can follow me, Akua, at HEYYAKUAGIRL. Hey, a cool girl. Yes. On Instagram and Twitter.
Cool. And you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter and fuck Snapchat because we don't use that shit no more, B. We don't use that shit no more. Thank you. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.